This is Joel Spolsky, the host of the Stack Overflow podcast. Our podcast depends on listeners like you, who aren't you because you're already listening, and we need more listeners like you. We don't have any kind of fancy marketing budget, so please, if you enjoy this podcast, tell your friends to subscribe. Thank you. Yeah, this story is not sufficiently sourced. I can't believe that we have journalistic integrity. Like, we're a podcast, man. We can do whatever you want, but, you know, I can't. This is the Stack Overflow podcast, episode 103, recorded Thursday, March 2nd, 2017, or for you Trekkies out there, stardate 1,001,062,000. At Stack Overflow headquarters in New York, New York, home to Inwood Hill Park, the last old-growth forest in Manhattan, where more than 8 million people live in peace and enjoy the benefits of democracy. That makes it sound like the people live in the forest.
Ooh, the tree people.
That's okay. We'll leave it. We'll edit it. I don't know. Leave it. Today's podcast is brought to you by the Jewish Festival of Purim, a lesser festival held every spring to commemorate the defeat of Haman's plot to massacre the Jews, as recorded in the Book of Esther. And She Geeks Out. She Geeks Out builds dynamic communities through events, networking, and education. Visit www.shegeeksout.com to learn more about upcoming events, workshops on diversity and inclusion, and their podcast featuring women sharing what they geek out about. On today's podcast, VP of Engineering, David Fullerton.
Hey.
VP of Stack Overflow, Jay Hanlon.
Good afternoon.
Is back, and our news editor, Ilani Itzchaki.
Hello, everyone.
And on today's episode, a special guest all the way from AT&T Labs, Dr. Mazen Gilbert. I'm your host, Joel Spolsky. Welcome back, everyone.
Thank you.
Hey. Jay, you were in, where were you last week? It was a disaster.
That's what you hope happens when
yeah,
you leave.
Yeah, that is. Yeah.
I was in.
No, not the podcast. I mean, the podcast was great.
Oh.
Yeah.
Really, better without Jay, I think.
Probably.
You guys, I'm right here.
Yeah.
This is super.
Oh, sorry.
I was in Hawaii, though, so I don't care what was happening to you.
I heard you had some exciting adventure with a toilet in Hawaii.
Wow, that got back, okay.
That got back to me quickly, yes.
So we were in Hawaii. We were visiting, actually, a friend you know.
Brett.
Senior Trello engineer, Brett Kiefer.
Brett, his family. From Trello.
He was Trello's first remote employee.
Yeah.
Actually, his remote setup is fascinating. He has like a whole room that is
just a monitor. The entire room.
No. He's got like this dedicated space that is like New York Time.
How?
There's clocks on the wall that have like the New York Time, and like he works there in crazy New York hours. And anyway.
Really?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So we were visiting him with another family in lovely Hawaii. And Hawaii, apparently, a lot of the visitors come from Asia, as it turns out. A lot of Japanese visitors.
What is that? Yeah.
Well, because you asked about the toilet. You asked about the toilet.
Wait, I might want to change my one-minute tech review.
So we stayed in a lovely hotel in the Kahala neighborhood, also home to one of our very talented PMs.
Right.
And this hotel, all of the toilets have this, it's like a robot that sits on top of, between you and the toilet seat.
Yeah, there's a lot of computers in that toilet
terrifying.
Seat.
It is, and like on the wall, there is like a super complex remote control. And it has little sketches.
It's called a washlet, which is a suspicious...
So do you sound familiar with this device?
Yeah, well, I have one.
Oh,
this is going to be an excellent day.
Yes.
The Toto washlet.
So what are the features? I want to know the features.
So I actually think it may be more helpful. Forget what it's for. I can tell you, first thing is when you walk past the toilet or near it in its general vicinity, the inside of the toilet lights up blue and there is a spritzing noise.
Just water. It's just water.
I don't know. It turns blue and does spritzing. Like, I thought it was just saying hello to me. Like, the toilet greets you like, I see you in the bathroom, Jay, is what I took it to mean. Because it lights up and it makes a little happy noise.
It's weird because, like, Americans are just too embarrassed to even think about toilets for long enough to invent new toilet technology. That's a great thing. That's why you need different countries. That's why we have like Japan and like Netherlands and stuff. Like these other countries are necessary.
Wait, sorry. What has the Netherlands done of any
I have no idea, but they may not be embarrassed about something else, you know?
Armpit washing technology.
Exactly.
I understand.
So they can work on that one while we're too embarrassed to talk about that.
Maybe you should give the proper review. I'll just give an overview of what the machine does. And what the machine does is
You know what it did? It got hacked. It's a part of a botnet right now, and it's attacking Stack Overflow.
It's running a DDoS attack on Amazon.
AWS S3. Yes.
Web services.
So that's probably enough to...
I'm literally blushing. Speaking of this, I never could have invented this.
It is a fascinating technology.
Like a bidet.
Yes, but it almost doesn't do it justice. It's more like, imagine if a bidet were like weaponized into a robot is a better way to think about this.
Yeah, it's sort of like the milk steamer on a... And here's the real truth about the washlet is once you've used them, you're going to get one for your house now, aren't you? Admit it. You're like, I should just get one for my house.
I will confess that while I thought this was both disgusting and solved a problem, I fundamentally do not have or understand.
Uh-huh.
Having tried it, I got curious about things like one... Okay. What does such a product cost? And two,
anywhere from like $150 to $800, depending on how nice a one you get and how many CPUs it has, how fast they run, and how many, how many websites it can attack simultaneously.
Does it have a touch bar? Can you get a touch bar? Is there a touch bar version?
Producer Jess is indicating that this whole section is going to be completely removed.
Yes.
Doesn't matter. Nobody listens to the podcast, Jess.
Break, cold break. Hawaii. Hawaii was beautiful.
Oh, I heard they have two kinds of lava. They have many words for lava because they live in volcanoes.
That sounds like one of those things that is not true that we say about cultures we don't understand, but that might be true. I don't know. Anyway, it was beautiful.
Yeah.
It is far away, but it is gorgeous, and I'd recommend it to a friend.
Wow, that ended so quickly. See, the first part was better. This is like when you ask children about their trip to San Francisco, and they're just going on and on about like a balloon somebody gave them. And you're like, what's the balloon? They're like, yeah, I got a balloon in the airport. And that wasn't even in San Francisco. It was in the airport on the way home.
And it was blue, which isn't red or yellow or white.
Okay. Great trip. We'll send you to Hawaii at least a couple more times.
Thanks. I'll just take that recording for my personal collection.
Looking through my list here, can we talk about the Oscars? Are we allowed to talk about that?
Like we do every week.
I'm like looking over there and they're gasping. There was a situation with the Oscars this year. A snafu.
Sure.
Yes, in which the wrong best movie was read.
Yeah, they read the wrong category, which resulted in them reading the wrong movie.
Right,
yes,
right.
Yes.
And the people from the movie that had not won then went up and accepted the award.
Correct.
And spoke for a while.
Yes.
And the people in the seats were getting up and getting ready to leave, at which point somebody came out and said, guess what? We did not win. The other people won from the different movie.
And they sent a stage manager out to do it. That seems like an unfair job for a stage manager to send him out to be like,
the chairman of the board of PW Pricewaterhouse.
Like, it's not a fair stage manager role, in my opinion.
Right, right, right. Okay, so this is a general syndrome. What is actually kind of shocking to me is just think about how much preparation goes into the Oscars.
They
how much
rehearsal. A little bit.
Insane. Yeah. I was listening to stories about the rehearsal. It was rehearsed down to the micromillimeter second.
And there's somebody's whole job is to hand those envelopes to people.
Yeah, two people.
Their whole job is to make sure they hand the right envelope.
Yes. And that's what comes down to the new thing, which I need a name for. We could call it like just the Joel rule or something, but I probably have one of those.
I think we. Okay.
Yeah. It's a principle that nowadays, it didn't used to be true, everybody can only do 93% of their job. That is the new, we live in a world where everybody can do 93% of what they're supposed to do, which is pretty good. But, you know, once in a while, you're going to make a mistake handing out the envelope at the Oscars. And this is by comparison to the way that the world used to work, where everybody could do 140% of their job, meaning they had some skill that was not needed for their job. They were not bringing it to bear on their current job. And every once in a while...
The theory is that the envelope handing over job has gotten harder in recent years.
Well, you could actually check what's written on it. You could have the self-discipline not to be Instagramming photographs whilst you're handing out.
Wait, is that a thing that actually happened?
How hard could it be?
Yeah, how hard could it be? Exactly.
I mean, it's such an esteemed position, you know? Like,
the handing
like
out
so
of the
much
envelopes?
Is on.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's not that
I don't think so. I think at this point they just hire somebody that can do it 93% of the time.
Most envelopes look the same. I got to be. They're envelope. You know, they're all the same shape and the same thickness.
I first noticed this when I came to New York, because New York is the capital of you can only do 93% of your job. It's the world headquarters of people that can only do 93% of their job.
The heart of your theory appears to be, when I was young, people took craftsmanship seriously and learned a trade.
People could
and
do
did
140%.
Well. And today,
yeah,
just saying, it's a, you know.
Why bother hiring somebody that can do 100% of the job when for one half the price, you can get somebody that can only do 93% of the job? And that's obviously what happened at the Oscars. I rest my case.
I told you we shouldn't let him control the soundboard. I told you over and over. Okay.
Yes.
So, Joel, do you have a rant or a tech review or something?
That's my rant that nobody can do.
That was your rant? Wow. That was like angry old man yells at cloud.
Well, that's what the category is.
I'm summarizing that rant as kids these days or something.
Sure, kids. Hey, this is a grogger for Purim.
You know Purim's not until next weekend, right?
Yeah, but it takes a while to record this and stuff like this. Purim will be over by the time the next episode comes out.
Purim is the one where it's a Halloween party.
You play this little sound every time somebody says, come on.
Everyone wears one of the same three costumes.
That's right. We have Millennial.
There's the Haman. Haman.
It's going to be Emma Stone. We're going to have Emma Stone.
Haman.
Yeah. Sorry.
Haman.
Haman. And there's
Queen
the king.
Esther.
There's the king.
Yeah.
Ahasuerus.
And Esther.
Ahasuerus.
The queen. The Queen Esther. I knew it was an E. And that's it, right?
Mordecai.
Mordecai?
Persian Beauty.
Yeah.
Persian Beauty. Nice. Yeah.
Okay. There's some other, I mean, people in Israel, they just do all kinds of costumes. They just do the Halloween thing.
But here's my question.
Yeah.
They got a good cookie form. It's pretty good. It's a little different, little pie like.
It's a triangle. It's a triangle,
like the Hamantaschen, right?
Or ear, depending on who's.
They go to all the trouble to invent a whole new cookie and make it good. And they're like, you know,
and they have noisemakers.
We should put a bunch of jam in it, too. And it's like, how did they not do this with cookies? And then they're like, you know what we'll do?
Prunes.
We're going to make the jelly all prune flavored. It's like, you just stole the
meat many out of other the things of that you can.
No, I know the apricot ones are delicious, but
you don't love. Are you telling me you don't like the prune ones?
They're not wonderful. They're not. That's my 1 minute. That's my rant on Purim, which I haven't.
Okay, thanks. Okay. 1 minute tech review. I'll try to do it in 1 minute. We've got to get to, I don't know, we got to get to things. All right, my tech review. You know how you get your email and you probably shouldn't just use the email that's built into your phone, because at this point, 99% of my email is worthless. And like 1% is pretty important. And so some AI somewhere is going to have to decide which email to show me. Otherwise, it's just...
You know, like a Google Inbox or an Outlook or something that has like a focused and unfocused and like semi-important and people you hated from high school.
Okay, so on the web, I'm using Google. That works fine.
Okay.
On the phone, you can't just use the one that's built into the iPhone.
No, I tried. It's no good.
The Mail app. Nope. You just get everything. Yep. It's just garbage. I tried to use the Google Gmail one.
Nope.
It's terrible. It doesn't even have the focused inbox.
Not good.
And they haven't improved it in like 37 years. It's like no new features are showing up in Gmail for
iPhone. It's really slow. It feels webby all the time. Like you're typing on the web. I don't know. On the iPhones, I think it's slow.
Okay.
Weird.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, it's ugly. Okay. For a while, I was using Microsoft Outlook, which was Sunrise, Sunset.
It used to be Accompli, I think.
Oh, Accompli. Yeah. That's
pretty sure. You're thinking of the calendar one they bought.
Yeah.
Accompli was the email company they bought that is now Microsoft Outlook. Only on the mobile device, not on the web.
Sure, sure. Yep, they the name out.
I like that one. I still use it.
You still use it?
Yeah.
I was using that for a long time, but at some point it just stopped being able to get my email. It was like, cannot connect to server.
It happens occasionally and then you can fix it.
Yeah. After three or four of those, I was like, all right, enough. You're gone. You're out of here. So now I'm using something called Spark. And I guess everybody else knows about this.
Spark.
Spark with a K.
Is it .io? Terrible. Why do I think it's .io?
No, the name of the company, wait, I wrote this down here somewhere. The name of the company is Readl with two D's.
Oh, sure. Readl's, they were one of the early business app or productivity app developers.
Readl with two D's?
Readl with two D's, sort of like...
DDLA. They had like clones of like
Excel. Sort
of
reminds me of Don Cheadle from...
Ooh, I love him.
What's the show called? House of Lies.
That's a good show.
Yeah, so Readl, which should remind you of Don Cheadle, the app is called Spark. It's an email app that does some kind of magical thing called Smart Inbox, where it just... Oh, and now it says, do you like Spark? I'm going to put yes because...
If you say yes, it's going to make you review it in the App Store.
Oh, no.
Yep.
Just
say no.
I'm reviewing it on the podcast.
Just say
it's
no, and it has
better.
No
don't
follow-up question.
Okay. It has a Smart Inbox, which shows you things that you actually want to see. It will get your inboxes from all your different inboxes and move them together. So, recommended. Spark. Not only do I have it on my thingy, but I have it down here. What's this place called?
In the special bar. The priority top.
Priority bar that shows up on every page.
Admiral's bar.
Right. The Admiral's
Looks
bar.
Looks like this is iOS only.
Spark email. Recommended.
No Android though.
That is my tech review. Do we have any guests?
We do.
Yes.
We do. We are very lucky today. Oh, there's gonna be a drum roll or something. I got super excited. The pause was super dramatic.
Sorry, all I have is a grogger.
Sounds like a broken machine. Okay. We are delighted to have with us Dr. Mazen Gilbert, Vice President of AT&T Labs Advanced Technology. We're going to dig deeper into this, but he oversees their research and development of its software-defined network. And prior to that, my understanding, I'm going to say Dr. Gilbert, because it's so cool when you're a doctor. You've been through like all the AT&Ts. You were at AT&T Labs and Bell Labs,
AT&Ts.
BBC, British Telecom. My big question is, I think this has been purged from all the annals. Were you ever there or at a place that was once known as Lucent?
I was not.
You missed the Lucent era.
I missed the Lucent era. I was in the Bell Labs Maury Hill building when we split from Lucent and we said goodbye to Lucent and I went to AT&T.
Excellent. So tell me, the first question I always like to start with is, how did you first get involved with technology, with programming, with computers?
So I think the first language I was developing was in DOS. I was in the 80s. I was in high school writing in DOS. I hated it. I thought this was the worst thing since everything.
And now you miss it.
And I miss it. It was when I started college, there was this thing called Fortran 77. Do you remember that?
Sure.
Fortran 77.
I don't know if 77 or Fortran.
It's very, very modern. I used Fortran 4.
You did? Oh, wow. It was just...
It was Fortran 2.
Yeah?
Fortran I never used 2. Fortran 2, but Fortran 4 was sort of the modern
So wait,
Fortran.
Were there actually 76 versions before 77, or did they just like skip to
No, that was the year.
Years.
That was the year.
It was just the year.
Okay, okay.
That was the last version of Fortran that didn't have object-oriented extensions.
That's right. That's right. Loved it. Loved it. I loved Fortran, and I was doing engineering, but I loved Fortran, loved technology then, and ever since, I've just been working on software and technology. I guess it's been 30 years now.
Well, I'm trying to think of something I've enjoyed doing for 30 years, and eating. Eating is on my list. So we got a sense earlier, you're talking about the sort of software-defined transition of not just the AT&T network, but the global network.
Yeah.
So what does that mean? What's the software-defined transition?
So think about the network. I mean, it's really the most complex beast on the planet. This network of how data and voice get to move from anywhere to anywhere on this planet, that's been built over the past 100 years, okay? It's just different companies have different technologies and different hardware and software changes, et cetera, et cetera. So what we have today is a big monster of a lot of different things. And what we started doing 3-4 years ago is really rethinking about how we could really throw all that away and rebuild that as software, as pure software that you can run on any cloud environment. Now, that's a big deal, and it's a sort of an effort that we started a few years back, and we are still into that journey. Big bet on AT&T, and globally, when we started this 3-4 years ago, people thought we were crazy. I mean, how can you put out this 100 years of technologies and things you've been building and really rebuild something in software? But now, you know, a year or so ago, is a lot of companies have seen that this is a key part to supporting more traffic in the universe. And we are now just announced this week this really incredible partnership. We call it ONAP, Open Networking Automation Platform. So this is under the Linux Foundation. I'm sure a lot of the developers know about the Linux Foundation.
Sure.
So we joined forces. We took our code that we spent a lot of people and years of development into this, and we put it into open source, and we've joined forces with a lot of incredible, incredible partners worldwide, from, you know, China Mobile to China Telecom, Orange, and Bell Canada, and 15 other service providers. Very exciting.
So I got super distracted when I imagined AT&T pulling all these giant data pipes out from under the ocean and throwing them away and then replacing them with software. But I don't think that's quite what we're talking about.
No. We still need the pipes, right? Can't just software define that there will be a network going from
the tubes.
My house.
All the tubes are still necessary.
Yeah.
You still need the fiber optics, clearly, to move, you know, the data around. What's different here, actually, the easiest thing, think of a computer, okay?
Okay, we're good.
And instead of you buy a computer and it's both the hardware and the software all in one, you buy one computer, one company that does everything. Now what we're doing is you can buy the hardware from anybody.
Sure.
And we will buy the hardware for our network from anybody, okay? And the software, really, you just upload the software on this hardware and you can spin up that software any way you want on the universe, wherever you basically want to put capacity. So it's a very different model than every time something goes wrong, you have to go and change a piece of hardware. Now, you just do everything with software. Big difference.
So this is really sort of the direction the software industry has been moving in general. But what's really interesting here is, I mean, this is, you know, AT&T and a whole bunch of carriers, as you described, running some of the biggest networks in the world, trying to move to a more sort of modern software-oriented environment. Like you said, you still have the big hardware, but getting it to be much more flexible and fluid so that you can redefine things as you go, right? I'm also interested in the open source aspect here. So you've been doing a lot working, like you said, with the Linux Foundation to make this open source, which is also really interesting. So tell us a little bit more about that and, you know, what your hopes and dreams are making this more open source.
The partnership with Linux Foundation is really cool. So we never thought that we're going to take this and put it in open source, but after a couple of years in the build, we decided that we really have this big vision of really driving global adoption of how all the telco providers in the world really apply software in their network. So this is really the journey we started doing in the past few weeks is we've partnered with a lot of these companies. We put something in open source. I think our code is about 8.5 million lines of code.
Wow.
We've put about 5.5 million in open source. It's huge, okay? But the interesting part of that, 50% of it, half of it is open source already. We took open source and we built an open. Now, you would have never thought that, right? You would think that you would never build the network of the planet with just open source. And that's really what we did. We actually took open source capabilities and we built on open source. And that's really what's starting to drive both the AT&T network and soon is going to drive the global network.
Got it. So if I understand, you were already kind of making heavy use of open source and using a lot of open source technologies as you were building this thing. And so I guess it becomes kind of a natural step then to say, well, if we want to, you know, just kind of continue this, why not make all the proprietary code that we've built on top of that open source as well? Is that the idea?
That is absolutely right. I mean, this is obviously important to our customers, important for us, important for everyone, because this what allows us to do is it accelerate innovation. No matter how many people we will have working on this, it will never have the innovation and the accelerating innovation as if developers all around the world really working on this. And remember, this is no longer just a developer working on an application that they want to put on a mobile store. This is like a feature or an application that you would build that touch the core network where every device, every application on the planet is going to be impacted and is going to benefit from that. So this is a big, big deal, not just one application. And so that's why a lot of people are excited, a lot of developers are excited, a lot of providers are excited, because this is the first time they will get a chance to really write software that impact the core of how communication happens globally.
So switching gears for a second, I was struck sort of reading some of your background. You were working on a couple of things that are super huge now, but it feels like way before they were, forget kind of in the mainstream, like they just almost didn't exist in the public. It looks like in 1993, you were working at Bell Labs on both machine learning and speech recognition technology. Just curious, one, sort of around what's it like sort of seeing it sort of grow up now, right? Really, this technology you worked on back when kind of people didn't know about it for the most part, becoming mainstream. And also back in the early days, what were the big challenges? What were you guys trying to work on and what were kind of the major breakthroughs?
Yeah, I was trying to figure out what to do. I was doing a PhD in Liverpool University in England, and I was trying to figure
out...
That's
where the Beatles got their PhD, if I'm not mistaken.
Absolutely. That was absolutely right. I actually lived on Penny Lane, so it was pretty interesting.
Wow.
So my advisor told me to go and figure out something to do for my PhD, to find a topic. And I came across in the 80s something new called neural networks. And at the time, it was a sort of an artificial representation of the human brain. And it sounded very fascinating. It sounded very interesting. And I was always interested in how computers at the time can speak and understand like humans do. So I decided to pull both of these together and figure out how we could use these neural networks, which today they call them machine learning, artificial networks, they call them deep learning, how to use that to get computers to learn how to speak. And that was sort of what my book was, or my PhD was, is really pulling that together. By the time, computers were not as sophisticated as it was today. It was all Fortran 77 stuff. So I would build this program, and then I'll go to lunch, and I'll come back, and then this program will tell me something. And it was very little data. We probably have like 100 data points. Today, we're dealing with billions of data points, and we're building, you know, networks that are many, 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 many layers, you know, billions of neurons at the time, a couple of hundred neurons, et cetera. But it was a fascinating problem, is that how do you get computers to really speak like humans and use neural networks sort of to represent that? And, you know, 25, 30 years later, I mean, it's quite fascinating that the few people that I was involved with who started a lot of that in the 80s really see the fruit of that today. Today, we don't even think twice. When you look at a lot of devices, you know, Androids and Siri and others, you don't think twice when you see a device talking to you. It's become a second nature to us. Very fascinating.
Sorry, I was trying to envision whether like Siri and Alexa sort of dream of someday tracing back their lineage and meeting you, and it's going to be a really awkward thing with like the people that raised them. Anyway, we'll solve all of those problems. We'll get the other AIs to create therapists for them. And
AI therapists?
Yes, yes, absolutely. Like Eliza, remember Eliza?
Yeah, yeah. That was one of the
first
ones.
That was the first thing that we made. So that
it wasn't an AI at all, though. Yeah. It's just a bunch of if statements.
Eliza helped me work through a lot of complex shit with my
parents.
That's
right. It certainly works better than a real therapist. And a heck of a lot cheaper.
Dear therapist, send your letters to Joel Spolsky, Upper West Side.
Yeah, so anyway, this neural network and machine learning technology is pretty fascinating and continues to be fascinating. actually early in the 90s, you know, I started a company. I decided that this neural network at the time was ready for prime time. It's about time to open a company in 1990 and make a lot of money out of this. And so I opened a company. I co-founded a company that uses neural nets to recognize who you are, recognize your voice.
Okay. Oh, cool.
That should work.
And the idea is that you would use it for your computer, so you can't log in or open a file unless you say something. And when you say something, it recognizes it's you and it allows you to open the file or open the computer.
Yeah.
And it was fascinating. I think we sold a few thousand copies in 1990, but it was way before its time. People didn't really quite understand machine learning and speech and why computers, why would you even talk to a computer? So unfortunately, we closed it down and that was the end of it.
Wait.
There was a movie Star about
Trek.
This.
No, Sneakers.
Sneakers. My voice is my passport. Verify
yes,
me.
Which came out in 1992. They totally stole your idea. And you have like a million patents. You should sue them. You should sue the pants off them.
Oh, no.
That Robert Redford guy, he's got a lot of money, I bet. Because he's handsome and he made a lot of movies. And that probably leads to money. I don't know. I've never tried either of those things. But
didn't win any Oscars. That
it was an interesting time. It's fun to create new stuff.
So if our listening audience, and you can assume a large percent of whom are developers, what's the one thing you want to make sure they know about, well, could be anything, what you're working on or what you...
Yeah, if I want to start programming the world's network, what do I do next? What's the first step?
So, you know, get involved with the Linux Foundation. We call it ONAP, the Open Networking Automation Platform. Mm-hmm. So if you like to code and if you like APIs and containers and all that cool technology, then this is sort of like kids in a candy store. You know, we're opening all that up and you'll be able to work with a lot of providers worldwide, a lot of service integrators worldwide. So get digging, you know, find more about it. And you know, there's a lot of information on their website, and there's going to be a lot more in the next 2-3 weeks.
Cool.
We do have one question from our internal listening audience, our employees. One of our listeners would like to know why his 8-year-old phone that's on the 3G network is getting such bad reception here in the U.S. Is there anything you can suggest to him? This may not have been such a good question, actually, after all.
So the reason I'm talking to you about software-defined network, you know, for the past 7-8 years, our traffic has increased by 250,000%.
Well,
more than any
percent.
Other provider. Exactly. So we cannot invest enough to make sure the quality is great with the legacy work, with the legacy hardware, so that everybody gets the best reception wherever they are, any time of the day. So this is why we're moving aggressively to the software-defined network, because what will help us to do is to completely accelerate adoption. So what we will basically do in software is that, you know, I'll be able to put capacity wherever I want instantly to help drive bandwidth better than anything else. So you tell your nephew or whoever the employee is that, you know, a solution is coming. It's coming. You know, just be patient. Things are going from 3G. 3G is a little old now. We're going to 4G and LTE. And this year we are actually putting out 5G.
We thought you'd never achieve 5Gs. Like,
yeah.
You broke the 4G LTE barrier in a way.
You have to wear special goggles.
This is like when they find a new spot to stick a blade on a razor and you're like, I was sure they were done. I was sure.
43 blades.
5G is rocket speed. You know, this is when you bring in virtual reality and Internet of Things and connected cars and all that kind of wonderful stuff, is that you really need this 5G to get this ultra speed anytime, anywhere. So tell your employee, start, you know, upgrading to 4G LTE and soon 5G.
I know he's run out of extra batteries for this particular StarTech phone, so we'll see if it might be time to nudge him into a transition, because I know they're no longer
available.
Did you
get the special, like the Jaws battery pack that you put on? Like
the
a big
fat battery. There was like the fat extra size.
No, there was thin fat, and then there was a giant one that was like long. It was like shaped like a flat iron.
Yes, they got into the appendages, and there was an appendage that was like, what if we, it could
they
be a palm
four
pilot.
Four whole hours of standby time.
Yeah. I remember it fit in your shirt pocket. That was their big, like.
Yes.
We digress.
Right.
Well, Mazen, thank you so much for being with us sharing your story. We do appreciate it. And good luck rebuilding all of those pipes. They look big and hard to manage. So I think the software thing sounds smart. And we appreciate your coming on.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Have a wonderful day. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye. Okay. We have a listener question this week.
Ooh.
Yes.
Excellent. Hey, you know what that means?
We used to do listener
Do you know
questions.
What that means? You know what that clearly implies?
I have no idea.
We have a listener. So what does my mom want to know?
I'm just checking
the
email.
She could have just texted me.
This person says that if we answer, he won't have to listen to Paul Ford's podcast. So that's pretty good. I didn't even know Paul Ford had a podcast. He's one of the funniest people.
So what's the question?
Question's from Ryan Tate. Ryan Tate is a tech journalist, been a tech journalist for at least 15 years. I think he probably became aware of me because I think I made fun of him on the Joel and Software blog for suggesting that programmers all sit in small offices or something. Anyway, here's his question. Who on a typical dev team reviews/edits source code? Okay. I understand the idea of a QA team, but it seems like someone should be looking at code before it goes live, I guess he meant, or before it goes to the QA team. In journalism, you file to an editor, and only then is your work fact-checked, which is Q&A.
Oh.
So essentially, he's coming from journalism, and he's saying, after you write code, don't you give it to somebody to edit?
Code reviews. Then you... We need to tell him about code reviews.
I guess a code review is a potential thing. All right, how many code reviews have we done? At Stack
Seven.
Overflow.
Seven in the life of the company.
That's so, good, well,
so good software companies like Google will mandate code reviews. I think Google, you have to get two code reviews on every check-in.
Whoa, what? Do you have to show code to two people?
The answer is, unlike journalism, instead of having an editor who reviews everything, it's reviewed by your peers who look at it and make comments and tell you that you suck and you're terrible at writing code. Yeah. And then you go cry and then you fix it. And then they say, okay, fine, we'll let you
but
check
in
it
code, in. You have to fix it. I think in journalism, the editor just edits it for
just
you.
Just changes it for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes your coworkers will do that, but that's considered kind of passive aggressive.
I think it's interesting. It means that journalists or even journalism writers don't have to write very well because they always go through a copy editor.
Now, so actually there's a second layer here, which is that code reviews test sometimes for functionality, but they also test kind of for style.
Yeah.
But then you've got like automated testing as well, which is testing like, does it do what it's supposed to do?
Yeah. Ryan also asks, he says, program managers don't review code. That's not their job, right? Is
no,
it?
No.
But actually, a lot of times they do. Like a lot of times a product manager feels like it's their responsibility to see if the code that was delivered is going to meet certain requirements.
They will test the functionality. They'll go click through everything and make sure it works right. And they're very involved in testing the functionality.
Oh, but they're certainly not looking at the code.
But they're not reviewing the code. No.
That is sort of an interesting idea. There's another idea, which is fairly common, which Ryan has probably heard of, called pair programming, where essentially there's a person sitting next to you looking at the code as you type it. And so the code has multiple eyes on it.
It's an idea everyone loves to talk about, and like four companies in the entire world actually do.
But I wonder, is he really asking, like, does someone actually review the text the way an editor would review the text? Or does he really mean, in the same way an editor would review this finished product of an article, is there someone that reviews
the
product?
Well, that's QA.
He's asking about code review, because he said, I know there's QA, but does somebody review the actual code? And the answer is,
okay,
it's usually peer review.
That's sort of an interesting idea. Like, why don't we do that? Just have a person, you know, a senior programmer whose job is to look at all the code that's being checked in and just, you know, edit it.
That's what code reviews are.
No, code review is different. A code review is an opportunity to criticize your peer. This is just like, it's your job to go fix it up. You know, and fix the indents and the tabs and the variable naming convention.
Well, okay, so here's why it's different than journalism, because the editor reviews the article before it goes out because that is the product, right? And so they're reviewing the thing that everyone is going to consume.
Ah.
The code is not the product, except for like, you know, maybe some open source things. The code is like the thing that creates the product. And so the thing that usually you really want to maintain is the actual product. And that's where you have QA teams and you have product managers and whoever else testing it and reviewing it. And you do A/B tests and all that, because that's the like final end goal. The code review is more of a technical concern, which is like, I don't know.
Got it.
His comparison feels a little, not flawed, but like when he says, like in writing, what the editor is actually reviewing is that the final product is of the quality and like is it a style and is optimized to go out.
Yeah.
And that happens, I think, much more frequently in code where there are people, product managers, testers, other people who are testing that the thing the code wrote does what it's supposed to do and works as a high quality product as an editor would. It just happens, I think, in journalism that the input text is the same as the output effectively.
Yeah, there's not a layer of abstraction there in between for journalism.
So hope that answers your question. This is Ryan Tate for Wired. Ryan Tate? That Ryan Tate? He's a Wired writer.
Yeah, it used to be Upside.
This was his sneaky way of getting you to do an interview for his upcoming article, which he knew you wouldn't agree to do. So he made it a podcast question. So now you set it on the podcast.
Cut and paste it.
And he'll just quote you in the article and say, you know, as heard on the podcast.
All right. Visit RyanTate.com for the details. Okay, as you know, we're preparing a constitution for Stack Overflow each week. Oh, whose phone is that?
That's mine, I'm sorry.
Hey.
Is it?
Yeah, you know better than that.
Jay, do not bring a phone into the podcast.
It's on vibrate. I'm sorry,
you're not going to get it.
It might be the kids. Let me just... Hello?
Hello?
Hello? Hi. Hi.
Is this computer help?
This is Jay.
This is Maybelline.
Oh, hi, Maybelline. I'm sorry. I think you may have...
I found your number on the Google.
No, I think I'm sorry. I think you may have a wrong number. I apologize.
You gotta help me with this computer. It's acting real funny. Opened up an email, Jay, from Candy Crush City, and they were offering 99 lollipops for the price of 10 Goober berries.
Google berries.
Jay, you know me. No, I'm always down
I
to
actually
deal.
Don't. Okay.
So
all right,
got
guys, you know
about
computers. You can help her out.
Okay, got my checkbook right here. And
no,
I
don't have your checkbook. Put that away.
Okay, so this computer, before I knew it, just started hooting and hollering and kicking up a storm. It started opening up boxes. You've seen these boxes. And then I saw a bunch of words. And then the computer started taking over on its own. And you got to help me, please.
I think
please, before this mean afternoon nurse finds me.
Oh, you maybe a nurse or an administrator
no.
there.
No. If a nurse comes in, they don't want me to use the Candy Crush. They're going to take away my computer. I've had final warning.
Okay, what do you see on the screen?
Okay, there's shaky lines on the side, and it's sending emails to bankers in Sweden with all my secret sign-on words.
Sweden? Both, what did you say?
I don't really think of secret. Sweden as being a hotbed of computer crime.
No.
Oh, no. Okay, no. A new email screen popped up. Hang on. Okay, this doesn't look like the old email screens. We might be in luck. It says it finished downloading in 28 seconds. Hold still. I'm trying to reach 25.
Sorry, man.
What's a torrent?
A torrent? Yeah, I think you may just want to, like, disconnect.
Oh!
Yeah. Oh.
Hit cancel.
Oh, no.
All right, what's going on now?
Oh, there is a photograph of... Oh, I can't even tell you this out loud, what this is. I can't. You gotta get this off my screen. What are you doing before one of my boyfriends sees it?
Boyfriends?
What? One of your
how
boyfriends?
Many? How many boyfriends?
Three. How many you have? They don't like me playing Candy Crush. It takes attention away from them. Wait a minute. Oh, you think I should turn this off?
Just shut it down for 15 seconds, maybe?
15 seconds. Okay, the remote's not working now.
And then just leave it off might be best.
Okay. Where did I hit cable and menu? External input. Okay.
Could it be a television you're watching? Is that possible?
Okay, well, I'm just going to unplug this because
good.
That's what I do.
Well, now I can't see anything.
That's what's supposed to happen.
It's so dark. Oh, hang on, honey. That was a lamp.
I'm not sure we can help you.
Oh, hickory sauce, it's getting louder.
Is that an expression?
Okay, I can hear the blenders inside here spinning real fast. It sounds like it's smoking. Okay, I gotta put this out.
I think you need to alert a safety person.
Okay, I threw my denture water on it, sweetie.
Oh, that's
yeah,
not
no, don't
safe.
Throw water
don't
on
don't
it.
Don't put water on an electrical.
The fire alarm is beeping. Oh, shoot. Oh, you've done it now.
You gotta go outside,
oh,
man.
Oh, some computer help hotline you are.
That we are not that.
What we do. Not our job.
I'll tell you what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna write a bad review for you. I'm gonna hang it right in the rec room where everyone can see it. Now, where can I hide?
Our name is Quora.com, so that's fine. We accept your criticism.
That's right. Okay, let's move on to the Constitution. As you know, we're preparing a constitution for Stack Overflow each week. At this time, we bring you a proposal, and you, our listeners, will decide on whether that proposal becomes a part of our new constitution. Now, with the results from last week's stupid constitution question, which was pro or con to 50-character commit messages in version control, here's news editor Ilana Yitzhaki.
66% pro.
Wow.
Yeah.
What? They're all wrong.
They're
this
in favor
is an outrage.
Of this 50-character.
You count all the people that liked and retweeted my tweet of con, because they should all count against.
Who was that, Stack Overflow?
It's not enough to like. They have to write a tweet, and they have to write pro or con.
I got like 20 likes.
With an exclamation.
Maybe 30.
You're saying
short,
if we don't like the national
convincing.
Official poll results, we should instead ask like your seven cousins who are excited about the thing you said? I think
I'm
we're
just saying I'm
that.
Right, and all those people are wrong.
Okay.
Well, I'll tell you who the winner is, Tach Zohar. Pro, because 50 characters should be enough if you're...
Oh, I get it. And then it just ends.
A++++.
Fantastic.
A++++. It seems like he's actually trying to make the point for con, but who cares? It's funny.
Yeah, so that should be 33%. Okay, let's do the next constitution question. Here's the question.
Okay.
You're making a sandwich for yourself.
I am right now.
Yeah. Do you cut it in half?
Of course.
Yes.
But it's not. You're not giving it to anybody. You're just going to eat
it. Is that the question? I thought it was going to be, do you cut triangles or squares? Obviously, you cut it in half.
Okay, well, that's the question. Pro is you cut it in half. Con is, why bother? You're making it for yourself. There's no need to cut it in half.
My question last week was way better.
It's easier to eat.
Yeah, but, you know, it's a whole extra...
We didn't evolve to be upright and go through thousands of years of building civilizations to just eat sandwiches that we haven't even bothered to cut in half, even though we have sandwich-cutting tools available to us.
Just go ahead. Just go ahead. Start with a crust like a farmer instead of starting in the middle with a soft part where all the meat is.
It is completely obvious they must be cut in half. The only interesting question is, does anyone not understand that grilled cheese sandwiches must be cut corner to corner, or we should be allowed to excommunicate you from civil...
What's wrong with rectangular?
It's fine for sandwiches that are not grilled cheese.
Okay.
Triangles, it's almost always preferred, though. Is there a sandwich where it's not preferred?
I tend to agree.
Sandwich cut in half.
What does it matter?
Pro or con, when you're making it for yourself, not obviously if you're making it for somebody... You can cut it in half, but it seems like a waste of time if you're doing it for yourself, in my humble opinion. So I am
unofficial, non-constitutional question. When you're home by yourself and you go to the toilet, do you shut the door?
No more toilet questions.
Hey, don't be making up constitutional questions.
I just don't understand why being alone makes such a difference here. We behave in a certain way because we respect civil world we live in. Okay.
That's right. That's right. Post your answer to Twitter using the hashtag Stack Overflow Podcast with either pro or con and your explanation. Short but convincing. That's the important part, that your explanation convince us. And you have to fit it in 50 characters this week, 140 characters last week. Best explanation, whether on the winning side or the losing side, it doesn't matter whether you win or lose. It just matters if you convince us, and it will be read on next week's podcast, and you shall win a fabulous Stack Overflow sticker courtesy of the Stack Overflow Podcast. Okay, if anybody has ideas for constitutional amendments, please write them on a 3x5 card and slip them under my door. That will be greatly appreciated. Thank you very much. Shall we do some news?
Let's.
Last Tuesday, Amazon's S3 web-based storage system went down, bringing down hundreds of internet services that depend on it, including Trello and Quora, but not Stack Overflow, which does not use Amazon Web Services. Thursday, Amazon announced that one of its technicians mistyped a command during a routine maintenance operation, bringing down the cloud-based storage system for hours.
Yeah. Okay. So the good news is, if you use Amazon Web Services and your service goes down, nobody blames you.
Yeah.
It's true, because basically the whole internet's down.
The whole internet's down. It's just like, go outside and play with a butterfly or something, because you're not going to be doing any work today. Or a puppy, I don't know. It's summer now in New York, so butterflies are fun.
And you don't really have to, like, jump onto an emergency call trying to debug it, because you just sit there and twiddle your thumbs and wait for Amazon to fix it.
And you get into a debate over whether you should have some kind of backup in case Amazon goes down.
That's right. You get to debate those things, and then Amazon comes back up, and you forget all about it.
But it's like, why do you get off the hook? It's kind of interesting.
Yeah,
like,
if anything else
went
down.
We had a single service provider that no one had heard of.
Yeah.
And we went down, and we're like, oh, dude, guys, not, it's Cloudflare. It's not us.
They'd be like, Cloud what?
Yeah.
It sounds like you should have decided that Cloudflare was an acceptable fare.
Right. I feel like it's both. Amazon has enough of the market, so enough other people go down with you. And they're better known than most of these
sites.
That's
right, because people buy their books there.
They're like a better target for annoyance.
Well, what's confusing to people, I've had this conversation with some family members. They're confused because Amazon wasn't down. Just things that relied on Amazon.
Because they're not dumb enough to use their own stupid service.
Oh, is it because it was really just their East? Anybody that was stuck on Amazon East went down. But the people that used Amazon elsewhere.
Are those their two products, Amazon East and Amazon elsewhere?
No, they got dozens, but...
It was that region. That region was down.
Yeah,
I enjoyed staying elsewhere.
I guess
is
theoretically,
like
if you were smart enough and spread across regions, you could have survived it even if you were on Amazon, and maybe that's what Amazon.com did, or they have a completely parallel set of infrastructure for Amazon.com. I would believe either of those things.
Yeah.
I will say, so Amazon went down and took down most of the world this week. Also,
including Trello.
Jeff Bezos was at the Oscars when everything went to crap there.
Was he?
Coincidence?
Why?
I think not.
I did see him at the Oscars.
How did he get
Amazon won their first, I don't know, Oscar thing.
And so Jeff Bezos
for
was
what?
There?
He was there, sitting like in the back when they tried to
He wasn't
him
one of those
like
people in
around.
The tour bus with the...
No,
so
no,
awkward.
Not Jimmy.
That
he wasn't
so
one of Jimmy
awkward.
Kimmel's tourists.
Walked up on stage to accept the award, and then it turns out he didn't win. And
really, really embarrassing.
They're like, actually, dude. Apple won the Oscar for this movie. Sorry, buddy.
Netflix, sorry. Actually, yeah. Netflix.
Yeah. BarnesandNoble.com.
Is that a thing? It's funny they made a website, isn't it? Like, that seems, I don't know, at the time they thought it would.
They made a Nook. They made a whole device.
An IPO and everything.
We have a former Barnes & Noble employee here with us right in the studio.
Yeah, you do.
Emphasis on formers.
Not so bad for anybody who bought a Nook. I was just like,
I also feel bad for anybody that bought a Nook and I used to sell them.
Can we say something about the poor programmer or technician or whatever who typed something wrong?
Who fat fingered the command and took down all of Amazon East.
You get the feeling, it's like sometimes it's like you're using a star or something and you accidentally put a space before or after it and you get like everything instead of just.
Yeah, they haven't said what the command was.
No, but they did say that the command brought down a large number of servers when they thought that they were only bringing down a small
It was
number
like,
of servers.
You know, kill 10 servers, but he typed an extra zero and it killed 100 or something.
Right, right.
So back to what Ryan was asking you in the listener question about code reviews.
Yeah, he should have been reviewed at that point. Somebody should be like, let me look over your shoulder. And in fact, what Amazon promised to do is change the command that he typed, like change the code, the app that he was invoking, so that it would check the parameters and make sure that they were not going to bring down S3.
It was going to do two things. It was also going to do it slower. It was going to make it harder to do it for somebody and do it slower. So you had time to be like,
that's sort of helpful.
Abort, abort.
Yeah, but they went further. They're trying to fix it twice. They didn't reveal who it was, but they said he or she will also be executed summarily.
Yeah, yeah. So, but using a guillotine that moves very slowly. So when you start to...
See, I learned last time if the guillotine fails, apparently, like you're set free or something.
Guillotine? Have I been saying this wrong all these years?
Yeah, you're the one who loves to pronounce things in the silly French. Guillotine!
Okay, enough of that.
Wasn't there also a GitLab outage? Same thing happened?
GitLab?
I believe that they were on S3, and that's why it happened,
Of the crowd
on Amazon.
Someone typed the wrong command.
No, GitLab had a major database like corruption issue.
That was before. That was earlier.
That was a couple weeks ago. I don't remember exactly what happened. I don't think it was a fat finger.
Wow. Yeah, at some point, people are going to be like, yeah, who cares? So the internet went down. It's not newsworthy anymore. I don't want to hear about it.
It's like when there's a blackout. You're not outraged. You're like, they don't happen too often.
Right. I was in meetings the whole time that Amazon was down, so I don't really care. People were texting me. They're saying, hey, did you do this? I don't know why they think I have the power to bring down Amazon.
Yeah, they think Taco sat on the wrong server or something, and that's what's happening.
Some way.
Maybe you can fix it.
Yeah. If I had the power over time and space to do things like that, would I be working here today?
I'd like to think you'd come to see us.
Yeah.
I think lots of things, though. Do we have another news item?
We do. A machine learning system created by Microsoft and researchers at University of Cambridge has gained the ability to write its own code by copying and pasting from other programs. The AI, called the Coder, creates new programs by taking lines of code from existing software and repurposing them.
Oh,
Mark
no.
Mark Rockschmidt, one of DeepCoder's creators, said one day it could let non-coders simply describe an idea for a program and the system could easily build it.
Okay, that part's nonsense.
The whole thing is nonsense, actually.
The first part is amusing because it's basically, it just grabs random lines of code and sees within just, it's not even clear that it like has any concept of what the lines of code are supposed to do or if it's just randomly mashing things together and hoping that it works. What I like about that is how much it mimics what actual programmers do.
Right, right. And also your criticism, David, sounds a lot like a criticism of the invention of natural selection. And that's like saying that God designs animals just by mashing together bits and pieces of other animals. That's absurd.
I think you're describing Dr. Frankenstein, but okay.
All right. Maybe you could make an AI that works just by trying random stuff until it works. But
yeah,
it's going to take a lot of generations. But the second part about like, well, the obvious application of this technology is that one day programmers will just vaguely describe what they want and the computer will know what they mean. That's like the thing that can't actually happen. That's like what people want programming languages to be. And it's like, no, that's not how it works because your vague description is vague. You can't just take a vague description and assume the computer will know.
This is actually kind of an important news story because the news story is so completely different than what actually happened. Like AI learns to write its own code by stealing from other programs. The stealing from other programs part is actually made up. As I remember, okay, here's what actually happened. Somebody had this idea of making software where you try a bunch of different possibilities and you try to evolve the software that's going to actually solve the problem through a natural selection / evolution type process.
Yeah, people have been doing that forever.
Yes, and so they came up with a system, and it says in the article it can only do around 5 lines of code, which means there are, you know, a few thousand possibilities for what they might be. You know, the combinatorial possibilities are not that strong. And when they say copying from other programs, actually what they did is they invented an instruction set for this computer program that was slightly fancy instructions, but that were sort of known to be Turing complete. But it's not really copying and pasting code like from Stack Overflow, even though I think they put us in article, believe it or not, or some versions of this article.
But that's just genetic. How is that different than genetic programming? People have been doing that for decades.
Yeah, the fact that somehow the stealing from other programs got into the headline is really bizarre because that's actually not interesting or what's happening.
I like the dystopian future it paints where, like, John and Sarah Connors aren't fighting this, like, omniscient Skynet-like device. Instead, it's like a 12-year-old plagiarism-inclined programmer is, like, the enemy computer that is going to take over the
world. But the plagiarism is not even the thing. It's just that it's using higher-level instructions.
But that's, people have been doing genetic algorithms for decades. I don't understand what's new here.
Nothing. Somebody, one of them, finally hired a PR agency.
It would be interesting if it were modifying its own code, but then the first thing it would do is break the thing that lets it modify its own code, and then it would be dead.
Just make them depend on lysine to live. That's how you keep the park safe from the dinosaurs. I'm mixing things up.
Okay.
Okay.
I judge this fake news. Well, you've gone and wasted another hour of your life listening to Stack Overflow podcast number 103, recorded Thursday, March 1000th. 2,090 million at Stack Overflow headquarters. If you enjoyed this podcast, please tell a friend. Spread the word right now. Stop. Hit pause right now. Go to your email program. I know you're on the subway. You're driving. Stop. Get off the highway. Send email to somebody and tell them, please subscribe to Stack Overflow podcast. It's very important. We need more listeners. This podcast has been brought to you by the Jewish Festival of Purim. Purim reminds you that in every generation, new enemies rise up against us to defeat us. Just like whack-a-mole. It never...
Sorry,
and
isn't our porn?
She Geeks Out. Yeah, we do have a Draugr. She Geeks Out. Their mission is to create an inclusive culture that values and upholds diversity, particularly gender diversity, by connecting passionate individuals from all walks of life. Visit www.shegeeksout.com. I've never been able to say that. Well, you probably don't even need it. You could probably just go to shegeeksout.com to learn more about upcoming events, workshops on diversity and inclusion, and their podcast. But first, our podcast, second, shegeeksout.com, featuring women sharing what they geek out about. Our audio engineer is Carlos Hernandez. Audio editor is David Greenlee. Technology concierge, Michael Rosa. Producer is Jess Purdue. Executive producer is Caitlin Pike. For Madison Gilbert, Rachel Drummond, David Fulton, Jay Hanlon, and Ilani Skocki, I'm Joel Spolsky. Goodbye!
Bye-bye.
I feel like I'm getting stunned when I hear that sound.
Yes, that's what it is. It's a stun gun. That's why it takes
a taser. Yeah. I really appreciate editor David because he's going to cut out that whole super weird, uncomfortable conversation about bidets and toilets.
No, why? That was gold. Radio gold.
We'll fix it in post.
No, this is live. We're on the air. This is live. We cannot. All right, cut. No, we can't cut. Take it out in post-production. There is no post. We're live.
That's what you actually want to happen.
Can you imagine how terrible this would be if it were live?
It scares me so much of being like live in front of like everyone. Because we now have like at least like 10,000.
Thousands of people download this and then delete it off of their phones. Unlistened to.
Abort, abort.
Hit cancel.
Can you hear me now?